Well, good morning, folks. Welcome to the Science of Sport at 5 minutes past 10 o'clock on Melbourne's home of sport, of course, 1116 SEN. Professor Mark Fabreo is not in this morning, but Jackie Lauder is, which is terrific. She's not in quite her normal state of function. She's in somewhat a state of disrepair. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm okay.
Well, tell the folks what's going on because it's not a visual medium.
No, I am on crutches. I have a stress fracture in the neck of my femur.
Now, the femur, of course, which bone's that for us?
The main bone in your leg.
It's the big
yes.
one, is it?
Yes.
The top there.
Yep.
So when you say the neck, do you mean near the knee or near the hip?
Near the hip.
How did you fracture that?
Well, just overdoing it with the running over time. So, so now I'm offloading for a little while. It's all right.
Emotionally or physically?
No. I don't really need to offload emotionally. I've just spent the rest of my weeks in the pool, which I'm quite happy with. I don't mind being in the pool. So, anyway.
Well, we do have someone in the studio who might be able to help you with that. His name's Dr. Cal Freed. He's no stranger to this program or this station. I think this is visit number 3 off the top of my head. Morning, Doc.
Good morning, Craig. Thanks for having me back here.
Thanks for being had, Tiger. Now, of course, just a quick snapshot. You are, you don't say this, but you are. You're an expert in the area of pain. You're a student in the area of pain and a teacher in the area of pain and pain management and treatment and the relationship between the physical, emotional and psychological. And you're also a sports physician in Boaten. And you also have a website, which is
www.painliteracy.com.au.
So Dr. Cal's in all morning, well, when I say all morning, till 11 o'clock, as is Jackie. If you want to chat with either of those, one of the best in the business in terms of sports med and pain management, Jackie also works in that area, and of course, sports psych. I do not much. I'm the glue that kind of keeps them together. I'm the cheese in the middle of the sandwich. 9429 1116 if you want to give us a buzz. Or 0433981116 if you want to SMS us. So what's the prognosis with you? How long do you have to do not much or unload?
Well, it really depends on when I can walk pain-free. So, could be anywhere from 4 to 12 weeks, I guess, depending for some people. So I'm not going to put a time frame on it. Just when I'm not in pain is when I'll get rid of the crutches and then start doing some other different exercise.
Dr. Cal, we hear all the time about stress fractures and normal fractures and breaks and shin splints. And can you kind of give us a little bit of a differentiation between all of those?
Oh, God, how much time have we got?
Well, give us the snapshot. What's the difference between a fracture and a stress fracture?
Oh, okay. That's fairly straightforward.
That's a better question.
Much better question.
We can answer that one. It's easy.
I suppose a stress fracture is really an overuse injury rather than an acute crack of a bone where the bone cracks in two sort of thing. The single biggest reason anyone gets stress fractures is that they just change the load too quickly. We look at all sorts of other things, biomechanical things, but that's probably the main one. And in the past, with just x-rays, we couldn't even really diagnose these things, and we called them shin splints and things like that. But these days, with the various scans, we can pick up the bone stress, if you like, quite early. And if you catch it early enough, it's quite reversible. It's almost like any sort of strain injury, you can get it to heal quite quickly.
So for people who do a bit of running, like Jackie does a bit, and she says herself she's not a runner, and I'm not a runner either, but I've done a bit of running over the years. I used to run obsessively, which nobody knows, but I ran like a maniac for a long time. But what are some of the practical things that we can do from a physiological and organisational point of view just to minimise the chance of getting those types of injuries? If we're going to be running,
I think the main thing is to get your program right. Get your, go and see an expert like you, and be told a nice graduated program, sort of, 10 to 20% increments. Probably from session to session, and maybe having 2 days on, 1 day off. There's different sort of ways of implementing it, but you need to periodize your loading and things like that, and then. I suppose people do talk about, having the right types of footwear, et cetera, et cetera. But I think I think personally the main thing that I've found in the literature and the research that it's about load management.
Also got to be careful of, like, for me, my loading was okay. I wasn't going ridiculous. I certainly wasn't doing too much. But my running style was heel striking a bit too much. So it was the force that I was putting through when I was doing the loading. So that's why it's also important to go and get your running gait checked and your style and make sure that that's all okay too. Well, because when you look at my program, it was actually quite sensible.
What do you run on? What do you like? Sorry, what surface generally? Concrete, dirt, grass, sand?
Well, a bit of everything.
Yeah.
Probably mostly the concrete, which is always a little bit harder. I mean, I go around the tan and then we've got the ovals right near work. Mm. But yeah, it was, like I said, I think for me it was more my style of running more than anything else.
And that's one of the things that's really hard to change, I guess, in that it's not going to happen quickly. If you have an inefficient or a poor running style in terms of biomechanics and, you know, foot strike and the amount of impact that your style creates on top of what would be normal impact, then to rectify that is going to be a work in progress over time.
I'm feeling really good now, but you're right.
That's the thing. That's the difficult. Once you get into that.
Well, without being rude.
No, that's true.
But sometimes you see people running, bless, and you go, oh my goodness, please stop running. And not because I'm glad you're out.
I wasn't quite like that.
No, I'm glad you're out running.
He's been watching me.
No, but some people I go, oh my God, quick, get on a bike because you, bless you, but you're going to kill yourself running like that. Yeah. Really get with somebody. Either go run on grass. Or get with somebody who can help you run more efficiently and more safely, for want of a better term.
It's not easy, but it can be done. I used to love spending time with the rehab people down at when I was at Melbourne Footy Club, and you know, I'd watch how they would instruct people, and over a period of time, they could actually teach them to run differently. But it wasn't easy. But if you've got an intense program like that, it can be achieved.
Yeah.
What about things like in terms of what, how do you compare the value of, this is probably more a me question than you, but you two anyway, the value of trying to maintain your fitness at a high level when people can't run, because nothing's kind of the same as running, but interval stuff on a bike, you know, rowing, riding, swimming, all the non-running stuff. How do you think that compares from a cardiovascular point of view in terms of, because you rode in here this morning.
Mm-hmm.
From your mansion in Portsea.
Oh, and, right. I wish.
How do you reckon that compares?
Look, I think it's important to keep fit. I think if you sit around doing nothing, you decondition and it's harder to come back. So whatever you do is good. You know, and it's not just from a structural sort of physiological point of view. It's from a psychological point of view, probably from a neurological point of view, and that, you know, your body needs that stimulus to keep fit and well. So there's always something you can do. I don't think there's ever a situation where I tell people to sit around and do nothing.
Mm. 94291116, Dr. Cal Freed and Jackie Lauder in the studio, and myself, Craig Harper. So I thought we might open the door a little bit. We're going to talk about a bunch of stuff today, and also remember you can direct the conversation if you've got a question that falls anywhere in the space of sport or wellness or health or nutrition or psychology or performance or recovery or self-management, injury management, anything in that kind of I want to be better and do better space, give us a call, 94291116, or send us a message if you're a scaredy cat to chat, 0433981116. So when I mentioned to you, Jackie, that Dr. Cal was coming in, you're a bit happy because you guys overlap. You work with people in obviously the psychology space, but also part of that is self-management of body and mind and injuries and dealing with pain. So how do you guys go overlap?
Well, I think one of the big areas from my end that I don't see addressed in pain is the psychological aspects of it, and how much it can impact people and how draining it actually is. If you're dealing with pain every day, and I give people a very simple explanation of it, which is going to sound a bit silly, but I think it helps, is I say, if you picture in your brain that you've got a fire station and you've got 10 firemen, and 8 firemen go out and work all day because we're walking, talking, we're at our highest levels of consciousness. And then at night, the night shift comes in and 2 just do the basic repair because we're at our lowest levels of consciousness. If you're dealing with pain, some of those firemen that work through the day have to then work at night. So they're pulling double shifts. And the longer that pain goes on, you're going to get tired. You're going to get exhausted. Mm. And then it starts to impact your emotions, and that impacts your relationships. That impacts your ability to stay motivated to do your programs or to even just get up and go to work. People back off socially as well when they can't do things. So there's a huge overlap, and we have to communicate a lot with the other practitioners that are working with a patient to make sure we've got all angles covered.
You raise a really good point on how exhausting pain is. Yeah. Last, I went and saw Cal a few months ago, and maybe four or five now. And the weeks preceding that, I'd been travelling the country talking. And the week that I was about to go, I had to go to Perth on a Thursday. I had my first gig on a Friday, and it kicked off from there. And on the Tuesday of that week, I stuffed my back, and I was in so much pain that.
Which is not the first time for you.
No, I was in so much pain that I could hardly even ambulate. It took me 5 minutes to get 20 metres across the road to get a coffee from my joint. And I was,
which is like literally five metres across the road.
It's literally 20 metres, and it would take me 5 minutes. So it took everything in my power to get to Perth. And I had to go because the workshop that I was speaking at was mine. It wasn't – everyone had
paid – You weren't sharing it with someone else.
No, it's not like there was 10 speakers and if I didn't come, it wasn't such an issue.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I got over there and took everything that I could legally take in terms of painkillers and what I'd been prescribed. And I was in so much pain, I couldn't stand and I couldn't really sit. If I sat down, it hurt. If I stood up, it hurt. If I walked with crutches, it was agony. So I kind of sat on this stool for 3 hours. And I don't know how I got through it, but I got through it. But it took all of my everything
at the end of it.
And fair dinkum, I finished it. I think it was 7 till 10 on a Friday night. At 10 past 10, I could have slipped into a coma. I was so exhausted. And I think that's one of the things that people don't understand is obviously dealing with the pain in a practical, in the moment, experiential reality, but also just managing the rest of your life in terms of energy becomes almost impossible.
I think the language we use around it is also something that we try and make sure that all the practitioners are on board using the same language because, you know, it's interesting, even with the injury that I have, I don't feel like I'm in pain. Mm. I'm in discomfort. I'm actually in more discomfort because I've got some other injuries around my hip, but I'm in more discomfort sitting than I am actually standing and walking. So discomfort versus pain, I think is a really big language barrier as well. And Carl would find the same thing. I think when you work with your clients, that you're going to see them struggle to actually define what's going on.
We're with Dr. Cal Freed and Jackie Lauder. Let's go to line one, Peter in Elstonwick. Morning, Peter.
Oh, good morning, guys. This week there was an article. I heard an article that Australian men are now the most longest lived males in the world.
Mm.
And I think they said the median age is 80. What does that all mean, a median age?
I think you might have muddled a little bit, Pete, there, but I think that means that, the typical lifespan is now heading towards 80. But I don't know. I mean, the doc is better situated to answer this than me, but I don't know that that's because we've got better health practices, but maybe because we've got a better medical system. Jackie?
Yeah, I think so.
Like we've just got better management of you know, medical conditions.
Yeah, but I think the expectation too on the practitioners is much higher these days. We have to keep doing more and more to learn more and more because it keeps changing and the population keeps changing.
9429 1116 if you want to join the conversation. Let's go to Scott in Cranbourne. G'day, Scott. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. How are we?
Good,
awesome.
Thanks.
Yeah, look, I'm in a similar situation to Jackie in terms of I had an operation about 3.5 weeks ago, had my gallbladder removed, and I usually go to the gym 5 to 6 days a week, and I was really, I was told at the time after no training for about a month, and I'm not the greatest at listening to medical advice, or any advice really.
So why are you ringing?
Exactly. What do you want from us?
So pretty much, similar to what Jackie said before, when she said, once her sort of legs out of pain, she'll start a little bit of training. I sort of listened to my own body, and once I sort of felt up to doing some sort of light training at the gym, I did go back about a week after my surgery.
Wow.
Well, I'll start. First, what I'm going to say, and I say this every week, keep in mind, everyone listening to this, that these are not prescriptions or diagnoses or recommendations. This is just three people in a studio talking about stuff. But from my point of view, I actually think in some ways, Scott, you're on the right track in the sense that your body's always telling you something, and Dr. Cow will agree with this. It's always giving you feedback, and it's our job to pay attention. And, you know, so I know that I've come back from injuries where it should have maybe taken 6 weeks and I started training 2 or 3 weeks in, but I wasn't training intensely and it seemed to do more good than harm. Conversely, I've also stuffed that up. But From your point of view, Cal?
Yeah, look, I think it's a really interesting question, actually, because we give a lot of caution messages as medical practitioners, and I think we sort of err on the side of more caution because we don't want anything to go wrong. But a lot of those sort of messages, as Jackie was saying, the sort of messages and the things you hear can sometimes actually make you overcautious and overprotective. And pain is a protective mechanism, you see. So if you think you need protection, you might actually have more pain than what you need. So there's a funny little group of people that I've observed over the years who have sort of, they come in, they say, look, you know, years ago I was told not to do this and not to do that or to have this surgery or whatever, and I just decided not to have it, doc. And they actually don't do too badly. So I think, much as I don't want people to ignore medical advice, I think sometimes we can be overcautious in the things we tell people. So I agree, if you feel well and if you're not going to burst your stitches, then just be sensible.
Last one before we go to the break. If you want to join in the conversation, want a little bit of feedback or some thoughts and ideas around your issues, give us a buzz, 9429 1116, or send a message, 0433 98 1116. G'day, Nick in Hampton.
G'day. I love the whole idea of you guys being three people giving advice. It's fantastic. I'm a triathlete and I've done an Achilles and I've come back and I'm running a little bit. But I've done the whole raising your toes up when you're on a step and all that sort of stuff, and then had some plantar fascia problems.
And
so I just wanted to know a way then that I should be then coming back into normal training. So the Achilles is with me all the time, and it hurts when I get up, but you know, it takes me 3Ks to start even warming up when I'm running. So I'd just like some advice on that, if that's okay.
Well, would you like the standard advice that it does work but maybe has some problems with it, or would you like the unconventional advice that I think is probably...
I'll give you a mixture of both.
Go answer. The unconventional.
Well, look, I think firstly, one of the problems is that despite all the things we're doing, people are having sort of more persistent pain, chronic pain, and so I think much as we focus on the structural side of injuries all the time, there's sort of more to it. And so I've actually developed a plan which I think applies to just about every type of pain. Can I talk about that now,
Craig? Yeah,
of course. It's just gone on my website. So it's a work in progress, but I've playfully called it Cal's Plan after my own name. It's a bit of shameless self-promotion there. And the first bit of it, it's four letters. The K stands for construct. Well, K stands for construct. A foundation of pain.
Right, we're not a spelling group in here.
Construct,
sorry to the teachers listening.
Construct, well, my wife's one. Construct a foundation of pain literacy, which means you have to understand pain. Pain is much, much more than just something you see on a scan. And in fact, the relationship between things you see and how people feel is very, very low. So the next thing is analyze what is helpful and what is unhelpful. Unfortunately, a lot of the information we give people, as I was talking about before, can make them overcautious, and so that's not helpful, and there's other things that fit into that category. Being, you know, reassured and giving a good program, that's helpful. The next one is learn that perceived harm and actual harm are not the same thing, but both produce the same sort of pain results. So you've got to get someone to take you through that and make you understand what that's all about. And the last one is start to move confidently. So once you actually can understand what's going on from that perspective, then you can start doing your rehab in a more confident way and start to progress. And then the standard things we do, such as the exercise programs and the various other treatments, they tend to work better.
And I'll just chuck on the end of that from practical, from an exercise science point of view, Nick, you might want to even warm up your Achilles and your gastroc and soleus and stuff, all the stuff around that area before you start to run. So maybe even I had a couple of terrible calf issues and right Achilles issue for a while. And before I would run, I'd just sit in on the bike for 5 minutes, five, six, 7 minutes, warm up. Do a little bit of stretching, and that always made it far less painful when I began to run. So maybe a little bit of pre-running kind of warm-up. We're going to go to a break. If you've got a question you want to join us on the Science Sport, Dr. Cal Freed's in the studio, Jackie Lauder, body stuff, head stuff, all of it, 9429 1116. See you in a minute.
On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy, the science of sport, with Craig Harper, Jackie Lada, and Mark Fabreo.
So good, so good. I got
Welcome back to Melbourne's Home of Sport. Professor Mark Fabreau is away today this week. He'll be back next week in his place, filling in very capably. Watch yourself, Mark. Is Dr. Cal Freed. Jackie Loud is now standing on her busted leg. Not sure what she's doing, but she's erect. It's 28 minutes past 10 o'clock. If you want to join us, feel free. 94291116. We're talking about pain and your body and your head and all the kind of variables around that. Talking anything else that you want to as well, but primarily focusing on how to treat pain, manage pain, and understand pain better. Now, you told us a cool story in the break, which I asked you to repeat once we came back on air, Doc.
Yeah, we were discussing how pain is influenced by the context so much, and I give talks, and one of the slides I give is something that was written up a long time. I think it was in the 90s, in fact. And on one, it's called The Tale of Two Nails. And on one side, there's a picture of a boot, a work boot, with a nail up in the front of it, right, you know, about a third of the way into it. And the story behind that is that the worker somehow jumped off something, and this went through his foot. He was hauled off to ED and had to be given intravenous sedation and medication to take the shoe off.
Mm.
And when they took the shoe off, they'd found that somehow, curiously, it had gone between the toes, and that's it, hadn't gone through his foot. And the picture on the other side, the other nail story, is it's an X-ray of a nail, a really big nail, through someone's head, through the sort of roof of their mouth into their head. And this guy was operating a nail gun, and it went off suddenly, and it didn't really register much. And he presented a week later to his dentist with a sore tooth.
So he had a nail in his head, literally?
Through his mouth, yeah.
And the other guy had a nail in his shoe, but not actually in his foot.
Yeah, that's the thing you can see. Remember, like, the first time I came here, remember I used that analogy of the flame and the finger coming towards it? Mm. And I said, you know, that your finger feels the pain well before the flame, and so pain is a warning signal.
Mm.
And I said the longer the pain sticks around, that distance increases. Well, I've got another little bit to that. If you take your finger and you put your finger through the flame quickly, your brain knows it's not going to be harmful, so you feel nothing. Whereas if you do it slowly, you're thinking about it, you're seeing
so
it.
So how does this work? I mean, give us the... You're exactly right, because I've done both of those, and you're, of course you're right because you're good at this. But how does that work? Are we creating the pain unconsciously?
Pain is pain. No, don't complicate it. I think that this is what I talk about.
But the guy who had the nail in his shoe, not his foot, that was pain, right? He was in pain.
Sure.
But he created it.
And every time I come here, I also have to bring in the basics, because there's obviously new listeners out there, and so they need to understand it. Pain is not an input; it's an output. So the things that input to pain are the electrical signals from things that happen in our bodies.
Mm.
But there's all the other influences as well, the things people tell you, past experiences, whether you've had a previous injury or not, and you know, whether you're having a fight with your boss, etc., etc. We know that if you have an injury and you have a perception of injustice, you get a worse outcome. So the context affects the pain. And pain is an output of the brain having processed all those input signals.
I think it's also important to understand that you can't judge somebody else's pain, because you're going to judge it on how you perceive things and your experiences with things. So, you know, I really get annoyed when I hear people saying, well, just suck it up. Well, that may not be that easy for that particular person, because that may be the worst that they've ever experienced. And if they've never had an injury before, this is their first gauge that they've got of what their pain levels are like. Mm. So you can't tell somebody else just to suck it up and get on with it, because you don't know what that experience is like for them.
Let's go to Christian, who's from, is it Guildford? G'day, Christian.
G'day, how are you?
Good, mate. Welcome.
Listen, I was born with a club foot, only one, so that was reasonably lucky, I suppose. And obviously the tendons and everything was cut and shortened during the corrective surgery when I was three. So I've lost a lot of flexibility and movement in my left ankle. But look, as a young person, it didn't stop me from running and playing footy and all that sort of stuff. Now, as I've sort of got, well, I'm 40, I'm experiencing a lot of soreness in my lower back. I've seen a podiatrist. They seem to say that I had plantar fasciitis. I've been strapping the bottom of my foot to work on that, which seems to provide a lot more power in that foot, because I tend to push a bit funny off that left foot. With the strapping, I don't, but it's still getting a lot of tightness in there, which I assume is associated with a poor gait.
Do you do any other kind of rehab or therapy? Do you stretch? Do you do any strength work?
Look, I'm pretty serious about my gym.
Yep.
I try and stretch, make sure it's warm, you know, and that. Particularly ankle and calf.
Hmm.
Yeah.
All right, let's see what the doc says.
Look, that's a really good example of the sort of stuff I see a lot of. And the first thing to understand is that the correlation between, all those things that you mentioned and actual sort of back pain and outcomes of your overall outcome is really, really poor. So you can get people who have unbelievably horrific sort of situations and they still manage really well and even compete in sport, and you get other people who have virtually nothing, no club foot or no issues that you could, like biomechanical issues, and they have severe back pain, and there's everything in between. So I think, as I said, if you look at it from a purely mechanical perspective, unfortunately a lot of that stuff fits into the unhelpful category of what I was talking about before. So you really have to understand your pain. You then have to understand that the relationship is not clear cut as you might think, and then you have to start adapting your body back to its best possible situation. And that's not just a structural adaptation; that's what I call a neurobiological adaptation too. You have to get your neurological system to come along for the ride.
How does he do that though? That I agree with you. Of course, what am I going to do? But it makes sense. But how? Where does he start?
Sure. Well, as I said, this is why I've developed this plan, and it's a
What's your website
again,
so people can go read this?
Pain literacy, all one word. That's all you have to remember. And as I said, the number one thing is to understand your pain. Understand that our current system, unfortunately, has a lot of unhelpful information in it. And it doesn't necessarily mean that information's wrong. Mm. This is where it gets really interesting. The information can be right, but it can still be unhelpful from a neuroscience perspective, from a pain neuroscience perspective.
And maybe from a getting well in inverted commas perspective. And also, different, even with somebody like Christian who's dealing with that, who had surgery as a kid, you might have 100 3-year-olds who had a similar surgery, and everybody's
exactly.
going to have different
exactly.
issues and symptoms.
Exactly.
And to say
and some
that,
will have no issues.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to go to a break listening to The Science Sport, Jackie Lauder, Cal Fried, myself, Craig Harper, are getting smashed on the SMS I am. I'll share that with you on the other side of this.
On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy, The Science of Sport, with Craig Harper, Jackie Lada, and Mark Fabreo. So good,
I got you. Welcome back to Melbourne's home of sport off the SMS. So let's get this right. Jackie, Craig, and Mark are all injured yet preaching health and wellbeing. 3 question marks. Very emphatic. Jackie, as a novice runner, what are you thinking running on concrete? Maybe you should get your practices right.
Before preaching.
Before preaching, and Craig is the worst. So thanks for your support.
Look, well, we don't proclaim, like we do know our areas, well, we do practice what we preach because we're out
injured.
There exercising, but we're going to get injured.
I think I don't smoke, I don't drink, I train 7 days a week, I eat well, I sleep well, I manage my body, and when I do get injured, because I'm 157, I look after it. So not sure there's too many frauds in the studio, but we'll take it on board as best we can. Dr. Cal Fried's here. Now tell us about the Pain Revolution ride.
Oh, thanks, Craig. Yeah, I'm dragging this 57-year-old carcass from Melbourne to Adelaide.
How's your self-esteem going?
So talking about, following on from what we were saying.
He's talking
before.
About himself, if you're wondering if he's actually, into... What was that
carrying
weekend at Bernie style? He's
got something.
I'm riding from Melbourne to Adelaide in April, 2nd to 9th of April, with the Pain Revolution ride. The group in South Australia, University of South Australia, a fellow called Professor Lorimer Moseley and his group, they've organised this ride. And it's not just about the ride. We're stopping in country towns along the way. We're going to interact with people and, local health practitioners. And the reason it's Pain Revolution ride, I suppose, is that we do need to start rethinking and re-engaging this problem because, look, just simply speaking, in a in a period of time, two or three decades, we've had incredible increases in technology and therapists and expertise and surgeries and everything, but we've had a really nasty increase in chronic pain in that time. So hence the need for a revolution to start rethinking that and getting the message out and trying to turn this around, because it's a massive problem.
Is it hard for you because you're a little bit outside the medical box, so to speak? Of course, you're a doctor and you're a sports physician, but you think a little bit differently and you challenge the norm a little bit and you push the paradigm a bit to the left. How many people are thumbs up and how many people are like, come on, mate, what are you doing? Don't ruffle the feathers. Or are they quite receptive?
I'm one of these people who just, you know, I suppose I just look straight ahead and I don't let much get in my way, I suppose. The bottom line is that I had a lot of trouble for many years trying to figure out why things, when I applied textbook approaches, why things were not predictable. Mm. I had trouble with that. And then it was, in fact, Lorimer Moseley who gave a talk that I attended. And to me, it was like the clouds opening up and the sun shining through, because suddenly there was this body of science, not just, you know, beliefs and thoughts and theories that actually explained what was going on in my practice. And since I've harnessed that, I've got to tell you, I could spend an hour talking about some case studies that have just been, you know, spectacular. So from my point of view, the science behind this is robust. You could build a plane on it. Mm. The trouble, you know, I hate to call a spade a shovel, but the trouble with the science behind a lot of the stuff we do, you know, in treating, you know, pain and injuries at the moment, is that if you build a plane on it, it wouldn't last 5 minutes in the sky.
Mm. Mm. Wowza. I remember, Jackie, I went and saw, like I said, I saw Cal. For the first time in a lot of years, I saw him about my back and he gave me, you know, treatment and all that and said, let's, you know, so we created a plan, but he prescribed me something that I may or may not have needed to use. And I said, what are the side effects? He goes, I'm not telling you, and don't look it up. Because if he had said A, B, and C, for sure I would have talked to myself.
Hang on, I have to say, I also said if you have any problems, you can contact me and I'll talk you through it afterwards.
Of course, but the point was he was basically saying, no, but I actually liked it because I think you understood and understand how much how easily we can create our own symptoms. And for me, that was the lesson. And I thought, because you said, I'm not going to tell you, but you'll be fine. And if you're not, give me a buzz. And I was just thinking, oh, well, I'll just go Google it. And then you said, don't go and Google it. I went, oh!
I'm brutal.
I think one of the other things that I always talk to people about too is this whole exposure therapy that people used to think, well, just throw someone in the deep end and just have a go at various things. And that's not always the way to go either, because you can drive someone much more into that survival zone of their brain where they're just like, so we think if we can get through it once and you just expose them, throw them in the deep end, that's going to work. And it doesn't work because it creates a bigger fear afterwards down the track, which is why we're saying you've got to listen to your body and not read all this extra stuff. When I had chronic fatigue, one of the things that I made sure I didn't do was read all these stories and whatever, because you've got people who've recovered really well and people who haven't recovered for 25 years. And so it can really scare you. Plus, you don't know someone's, say for me at the moment, I don't know anyone else's bone density. I don't know, you know, what their loadings are like each day in their day-to-day job. Mm. There is absolutely no point in me comparing to someone else. I'm just going to go, well, when I feel pain-free, that's what I'm going to listen to.
Yeah, the problem with that is that pain is not an accurate marker. And this is the real problem. If you go by pain alone, you may not get where you want to get to, because pain is not an accurate marker of tissue damage.
No, but if you also go by functionality as well, like can I do what I'm doing without any pain, but also can I enjoy it and just get involved in the activity? Like they're going to be my biggest gauges.
Yeah, I don't think you should throw people at the deep end, but I think you should empower them with an understanding of what they're going through. And then they start to understand what the difference is between perceived harm and actual harm, because the pain is the same or worse from simply just perceived harm. This is all getting a bit heavy, Craig.
No, I like it. Off the SMS, just quickly, first time I've ever texted in, guys, but love your work. My drive to work every Sunday is always enjoyable. Keep it up. Thank you very much. Miles and Turek just tuned in. Does your discussion include nerve pain, or is it just to do with injuries? Well, it's all correlated.
Nerve pain works exactly the same way. Input signalling, output pain. It's just that nerves seem to, I suppose, have a little peculiarity in that they produce a higher pain response, and also that pain response can stick around a long time after the nerve has stopped sending signals. So that's another problem. But it is the same mechanism. Again, let's try and simplify it. Input, output, that's how it works.
94291116, still got time for a couple of calls and questions. 14 minutes to 11 o'clock. Coming up after 11, Sunday Sports Central with Rowan Connolly. From 12 to 2, but before that, BP, the first serve. Head to a break. We're back on the other side of this.
On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy, The Science of Sport, with Craig Harper, Jackie Lada, and Mark Fabreo.
Welcome back to Melbourne's home of sport. Jackie, I'm going to throw you in the deep end and give you a Craig question, but I know you can do it. Hi, guys. I'm 20 going on 21. I'm a pretty skinny person, just wondering what I could do to put some muscle on a consistent basis.
So they have to have the right weight programs with the right increments at the right times. So you can put it on, but you've also got to look at, obviously, like we've been talking about, your loadings. But I would be recording what they're doing so they can see their progressions, know their starting point, know their end point. The other thing to have a look at too is obviously their diet as well. So are they eating the right foods that might help with that? How's that for a start?
Good, good. I mean, exactly right. There's lots of variables around this stuff, and lifting weights is one of them. It's probably the most important, but, you know, sleep and nutrition and recovery and the kind of weights you lift and all those things that Jackie said. And remember that, you know, when you're growing muscle, it's an adaptive response. So your body won't get into a state of hypertrophy. It won't build muscle unless you give it a reason to. And the truth is that a lot of people who lift weights basically are following a maintenance program. That is, they consistently stimulate their body the same way, week in, week out, month in, month out, and then wonder why their body's not progressing, changing, or adapting. And the reason is it doesn't need to. So whatever program you follow, and not just for weights, but for everything, stretching, power, speed, flexibility, agility, if you want improvements and gains, it needs to be progressive in nature. What do we now, we're with Dr. Cal Fried, what do we now know, or what do you now know about pain and the way that it works that you didn't 20 years ago?
Oh,
I know there's.
We're at the end of the hour, not the start. Well,
give us one or two things that you now go, oh, okay, this is very clear to me. It wasn't.
Pain is really fascinating. That's the thing. I think this the standard way that I used to look at it, and I have conversations with people, and everyone seems to think that pain is something you see on a scan. You know, someone comes in with pain, you do a scan, you find something, and then you start sort of throwing darts at it. That just doesn't. First of all, it's not right. It's not scientific. It's not valid. And secondly, it doesn't work. And the overall outcomes attest to that. As I said before, chronic pain's going up, not going down. So it's fascinating. And when you look at it through the neuroscience eyes, it all starts to make sense. And then the question is, how do we translate that into something that people can use? And that's the challenge.
How much of our pain as we experience it is treatable, that's the wrong word, but manageable or even curable by us in terms of the way that we get our mind around, because you talk about that this is a multidimensional thing. It's not just physiological. It's emotional, psychological, it's neural, it's muscular, it's all of that stuff. How can we heal ourselves?
Quantify is difficult, but I can give you some basic facts. Pretty much anything you might be reading in the papers. The other day there was something on anti-inflammatories there was one on paracetamol for back pain. Doesn't work.
Mm.
The placebo effect is going up in Western society, and so the standard medications are becoming ineffective compared to placebo. So that speaks for itself. If we can harness the mind-body connection properly, and this is something I'll be honest, 10 years ago, before I understood this, I used to laugh at it. To me, it was all sort of made sense through.
Gobbledygook.
Yeah, but when you actually look at the science behind this, this is fascinating. You know, we can create huge changes in not just pain, but in health by simply meditating. That's another fascinating area. So there's enormous benefits to be obtained in harnessing this mind body stuff, but in a way that makes sense, that people can integrate rather than feel challenged by it. The minute they walk out of the office and they think that doc just told them, oh, it's in my mind and I'm imagining it, that's it. I've not got the message across.
When you say, just sorry, Jack, when you say the placebo response is going up, that is, more people are responding to placebos, which is a placebo is nothing. It's inert. It's got no pharmacological or whatever you call it benefit, right? So
correct.
We're healing ourselves. We're creating that response via our belief in this pill that we think is something.
Correct. And the thing about that is that when you look at the science of placebo, and unfortunately its evil twin brother, nocebo, which is the opposite.
Yeah.
Yes, it's an inert substance that has no effect, you know, direct effect, but it has an enormous psychobiological effect. These things can be measured. We can measure changes in pain transmitters, and inflammatory markers, in immune responses.
So interesting.
Simply by giving people the right sort of context, which is, you know, some belief. Now,
so can you trick them into healing?
How do you sit with that?
It's not about tricking them into healing, though.
That's right.
It's about helping them understand healing.
Correct.
And
empowering.
And yeah, and making them realize they have a fair bit of control over their own body. It's like we've got this reliance now on a quick fix and trying to medicate straight away, or trying to say, well, what's the one thing I can do and I'm going to get better? And number one, you have to be patient. I think what this also shows over the last 10 years is that all of the sciences have to keep working much better together. Mm. It's not just, you know, a doctor's not just going to work on their own anymore. They're going to use the skills of your exercise physiologist. They're going to use the skills, whether it be that of a massage therapist, you know, some of the lymphatic drainage stuff that's come out, you know, in the last few years is really interesting. They're going to use a dietitian and a psychologist. And the team approach is, to me, the thing that has changed the most in the last 10 years.
I couldn't agree more. The one thing I'll just butt in here, because the placebo thing is just coming back to that.
Mm.
A couple of studies, really interesting studies. One was done on irritable bowel syndrome, where they told the people they were getting a placebo, but they put it in that positive, empowering sort of context rather than sort of, you know, belittle the placebo. And they still had a positive effect. They repeated it recently in back pain, same thing. They got a positive outcome in the people who knew they were getting a placebo. So it's all about empowering people to understand what's going on. That's why I come back to pain literacy. If you can get people to understand pain through the science, they've got a foundation for recovery.
And not be scared of it. I think, you know, the word pain it's not a dirty word. I think it's an experience. And if you are happy to learn a little bit from the right people, from the right resources, and that's also why we say don't just go and read everything yourself, because Dr. Google's not a doctor. You know, you have to know that you're reading credible resources, but educate and understand pain. Don't be scared of it. Let's just try and understand it.
Do we need to know the mechanics of it, though? Do we really need to understand it, or do we just need to understand that I can heal myself?
No, we don't need to understand it, but I think unless you do, you're a little bit more vulnerable than you would be otherwise. People, for example, now benefit from exercise programs without understanding their pain.
Yes.
Right? But again, you have to look at the overall statistical outcomes. We're not winning overall. Until we start to bring that line down, and there's no reason we can't, because, you know, these injuries just don't merit these outcomes. And it's, the other thing, it's peculiar to developed nations as well. Back pain is the single most expensive and tragic sort of problem that we have in developed nations. It's huge. And until we start bringing that down, I don't think we can rest on our laurels and just say, let's do it, you know, in an ad hoc way.
I think the other thing that I would add into is the environments that we go into. So if you have a look at the children's hospital and you go in and it's colourful and it's vibrant, and that changes your psychology around any condition and health. You go into any of the hospitals where adults are, it's boring as all hell. Mm. It's not conducive mentally. Like, people adapt the mentality of being a patient. Why can't we in some of the other hospitals be using colours on the walls and have a more vibrant environment? So it's not only the conditions that we're dealing with, but the environments that we're in make a huge difference as to how we interpret something, how we approach something, and therefore how we manage.
There's a really good book on that. I don't know. Drunk
Tank Pink.
And it talks about the way that our environment, colours, nature, noise, puppies, you know, whatever it is that's in your space that affects your nervous system, your emotional state, and all of those things.
That's enriched environments. It's all neuroscience stuff now. Is the enriched environment? You've got to make it a place where you actually want to be.
Coming up after 11 o'clock, the first serve between 11 and midday. After that, between 12 and 2, Sunday Sports Central with Rowan and the Hawks v North at Arden Street from 2. Where can people find you? There's people going, how do I get onto this bloke? What's his website again?
Painliteracy.com.au, or the other one is just my name, Cal Fried, K-A-L-F-R-I-E-D. Both will take you there.
K-A-L-F-R-I-D. And
what if I-E-D.
F-R-I-E-D.
Yeah, sorry.
Right. And what if people want to contact you, Jackie, or connect?
I'm down at Olympic Park Sports Medicine Centre, so you can jump on www.opsmc.com.au.
Off the SMS from Simo, Jackie, you're a class act. Keep up the great work.
Oh, thanks, Simo.
Cal Fried with a K, thanks for coming in. It's been
my pleasure.
Awesome.
Thanks for having me.
Jackie Lauder, what's on this week?
Well, I'm taking it a little bit easy.
Oh, that's right. So, Look after your fractured femur with you.
But NRL starts this week.
You excited about that?
I am excited. I do some work with Storm. So, yeah, round one on Friday.
Oh, do you do stuff with Storm?
I do.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah. So I'm excited for that.
Thanks for joining us, everyone. We'll be back next week between 10 and 11, The Science of Sport. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. Have a great week. Look after yourself. Look after your body. Thanks to Jackie, our producer. See you next week.